Hello and welcome to the Reading of the Courier. And this is Thursday, September 21st, and I am your narrator, Peter Welch. And we are reading the e-edition of the Courier on Thursday, September 21st. And let's now take a look. Oh, I also would like to remind you, you are listening to IRIS, I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. Okay. Let us take a look and see what we've got going on here today. UNI Hidden Gems marks anniversary. 50 years since Darrell Smith Prairie planted on campus. Just a few blocks from the center of the University of Northern Iowa campus, people can venture into 8 acres of native prairie. Darrell Smith Prairie is located right off the University of Avenue at 720 West 29th Street. Although somewhat hidden, the prairie has been there for 50 years. The UNI Department of Biology and the Tallgrass Prairie Center celebrated the anniversary on Saturday. The prairie is home to about 100 plant species, as well as a number of insects and also birds and mammals. The Darrell Smith Prairie was the beginning of UNI's biological preserve system, which is more than 80 acres of prairie forests and woodlands. Laura Jackson, who is the director of the Tallgrass Prairie Center, said that UNI is unique for how many natural areas are on campus. She called Darrell Smith Prairie the jewel in the crown of its finest and most distinctive assets. The preserves are along Dry Run Creek and have a 5.8 miles of trails, which are open to the public. Like many good things, it can be easy to take for granted, Jackson said. Today, the day to celebrate it, recognize it, and look forward to the next 50 years. The nearly 70 attendees had the chance to try out the new campus trail system, watch migrating monarchs, identify native plants, and catch insects. One family, the Rumseys, took to the field to try and catch bugs. If a bug was caught, they would take it back to an entomologist who would identify it. The Rumsey kids, Emily, age 4, and Jackie, age 6, swatted at plants to catch bugs in their nets. They were looking for grasshoppers in particular. Their parents, Chipnia and Brian, who both teach at UNI, said that they had lived in the area for 7 years and didn't know that the prairie even existed. All right. Creating habitat, nurturing nature is our next article. Efforts to build monarch butterflies thrive are underway across the Cedar Valley area. In Evansdale, Stephanie Rawl knew that she needed a way to fight her boredom during the COVID-19 pandemic, but she didn't have monarch butterflies in mind. However, when she first found milkweed growing in the river rock in her front yard, she knew to check under the leaves for eggs, and she wasn't disappointed. We couldn't really do anything. We couldn't go hang out with friends because there were all these rules and regulations, Rawl said. I had some milkweed come up, and I thought, well, this is kind of neat. And I'd seen some things on Facebook, and we just started raising butterflies. Over the last 3 years, Rawl has raised nearly 400 monarch butterflies and released them in the wild to go on their migration to Mexico. This period from egg to adult can last about 30 days. Meanwhile, Rawl keeps milkweed growing to continue the cycle. Over recent years, pollinating insect populations have declined at an alarming rate due to habitat loss, pesticides, and disease. Monarch butterflies have a 3% chance of surviving from egg to adult, but since Rawl is raising them in captivity, they have a much higher chance. Rawl's efforts are just one part of a larger effort in both the public and private sectors to help restore the populations of pollinating insects across the Cedar Valley area. According to Blackhawk County Conservation Director Mike Hendrickson, The Cedar Valley Monarch Zones project has been going on for 4 years to cultivate flowers and plants favored by monarch butterflies. The idea came from a similar project in Linn County that saw tremendous success in boosting the populations. He said that the Cedar Valley area is in a unique position geographically to make a difference in bolstering their numbers as it's on the migration path. We have a corridor that really does come down through northeastern Iowa and then heads on south and heads on its way to Mexico where they overwinter, Hendrick said. So it only makes sense that if there are anything we could do to help, it's to create habitat along the route to give them the places to rest and to feed and to reproduce, all these things. The Monarch Zones are collaborative efforts with the cities of Waterloo and Cedar Falls, as well as the Cedar Valley Arboretum and Botanic Gardens, which have planted small plots for flowers and plants in the public areas. Their ultimate goal is to establish 1,000 acres over 10 years. Around 200 acres have been planted thus so far. Okay, let's turn now to the Cedar Valley section of today's paper. Stabbing injures one. In Waterloo, one person was taken to the hospital following a stabbing outside a downtown bar early on Saturday. Witnesses told that the police there, that there was an argument between a man and a woman outside the Carmer Bar on West 4th Street around 12:46 a.m. Another man attempted to intervene and was stabbed in the shoulder and stomach. According to police, he was taken to Mercy One Waterloo Medical Hospital for treatment, and the injuries aren't life-threatening, the police said. No arrests have been made so far, and the incident remains under investigation. Also in Waterloo, a judge has lowered the bond for a recent graduate accused of bringing a pistol to a high school football game last month. But the judge didn't lower it to the amount the defense had been asking. Bond for Dayton Amaru Shakur Bruce, age 19, was set at $100,000 when he was detained on charges of carrying weapons on school grounds and interference while armed in August. He was also cited for trespassing. On Monday, defense attorney Matthew Hoffrey called the bail amount excessive for the two low-level felonies with which Bruce is charged. Hoffrey noted that Bruce, who graduated from West High School in May, has job prospects and no serious prior run-ins with the law. We feel that level of bond is extremely unreasonable. He's a lifetime resident of Waterloo, and his family all live in Waterloo, Hoffrey said. Hoffrey asked for a $10,000 bond. Instead, Judge David Stout lowered the bond to $60,000 cash or surety. He also directed that Bruce would be under pretrial supervision if he posts bond. Police allege Bruce, who had been earlier banned from East High School events, was spotted during a disturbance at the East versus West football game at Memorial Stadium on August 25th. And he allegedly ran from the police and tossed a 9mm ghost gun into the bed of a parked pickup truck. Assistant County Director Brad Waltz pushed to keep bond of $100,000. And he also said that Bruce was involved in another gun-related incident on school property. The situation is a very dangerous situation. The defendant had this item on school grounds after he had been previously removed, Waltz went on to say. Man, dog, dead in Tuesday house fire. In Waterloo, a Waterloo man who was found in his burning house on Tuesday morning has died. The identity of the man hasn't been released pending notification of family, and the man's dog also perished in the fire. A passerby called 911 around 9:08 a.m. after noticing smoke coming from the one-and-a-half-story home at 529 Hope Avenue. When firefighters arrived, they found that the house completely filled with heavy smoke and extinguished a fire inside. And Waterloo Fire Rescue Battalion Chief Troy Luck. They also discovered the resident and the dog inside. Both were unconscious. Charring molten vinyl siding and other fire damage was evident around the upstairs windows. Burn marks were also on the front door, which had been removed from its hinges during firefighting efforts. Robbery arrest made in Waterloo. A man has been arrested for allegedly forcing an acquaintance to transfer money to his bank account. Waterloo police arrested Taden Allen Rogers, age 19, on Tuesday on charges of second-degree robbery, a felony. The victim told the police that Rogers was staying at a LaPorte Road hotel on the 7th of August when Rogers assaulted him and made him move funds to Rogers' online account. Officers noticed injuries on the victim that were consistent with his account. Man pleads to gun possession. A Waterloo man who was found with an illegal machine pistol has pleaded to weapons charges. Delanese Moody, age 38, entered a plea to one count of felon in possession of a firearm in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids. The charge is punishable by up to 15 years in prison, and sentencing will be at a later date. Authorities allege that Moody is prohibited from handling firearms because of prior felony convictions for drugs, theft, and fleeing from the police in Minnesota back in 2007. And 2008, Waterloo police searched his motel room in Waterloo on May 23rd of 2021 and found a .40 caliber Smith & Wesson SD-40 handgun with a green laser under a pillow. Then on June 13th, 2021, Waterloo police stopped him for speeding around 1:24 a.m. in the area of Ankeny and Newell Streets. Under the rear seat, officers found a .40 caliber Glock 23 handgun equipped with a drum magazine and a switch capable of allowing the gun to fire fully automatic, adding to court records. Officers also found marijuana and ecstasy pills. Okay, let's continue on the front page section of the paper. As we turn now to page 3, final code change okayed for institutional parking in Cedar Falls. St. Patrick's Catholic Church's plan for a newly acquired half acre at 123 West 7th Street will include a new parking lot. The church, as well as any place of worship, school, and other civic and institutional organizations, may have parking an accessory use across the street from a downtown property's principal use without significant restrictions, thanks to the support from a supermajority of the city council on Monday. The council overturned a previous ruling of the Planning and Zoning Commission, needing a supermajority or at least 5 votes on the third and final resulting of an ordinance. The measure passed 6-1, and County Member Kelly Dunn dissented out of a concern for disrupting the vision behind the fairly new downtown code. The requirement was technically the same under the former code overhauled in 2021. The commission denied the institutional uses to be granted as an exception and be treated differently in the downtown code written to protect pedestrians in mixed-use areas, though setbacks relative to the principal use. And additionally, a goal was to preserve valuable downtown land for other uses. All right, let's keep on here. Let's see what's going on next here in the paper. In the Cedar Valley area, we have Iowa Supreme Court hears case in Waverly. Residents got a firsthand view of how Iowa's highest court operates on Tuesday. the Iowa Supreme Court traveled to the Waverly Shell Rock High School auditorium to hear oral arguments in a Worth County drug appeal as part of its ongoing outreach program. The court didn't decide the matter, which involved the police canine search of a semi at a highway way station during the session. But after the hearing, Chief Justice Susan Christensen gave the audience a behind-the-scenes look at what comes next when it comes to crafting rulings. The justices usually take their regular seats in a conference room like cows in a barn and hand the matter to one justice to write a draft opinion. That is passed around, and then a vote is taken. Maybe the author writes the opinion, and he or she is the only one who likes the idea as it is written, and every other person sees I'd do the opposite. Christensen said, if the author stands by his or her opinion, another justice will take over to write the majority opinion, which then gets a similar review and vote. We go back and forth, and maybe someone says, after all I do like the idea, and I've changed my vote. So until it's done, it's not done, Christensen said. By the time we have an opinion that's ready to be published, we've had 7 people put our 2 cents in each, so it's a 14-cent opinion, she said. In the Worth County case before the court, driver Stephen Ariatas appealed a marijuana conviction stemming from an August 2020 incident where a drug detection canine named Titan allegedly alerted to the scent of drugs on his vehicle. Authorities had sent for the dog, which officials reviewed his driving log and cleared up an erroneous report that this truck had been reported stolen. Titan then completed 1 pass of the vehicle without incident, but the dog allegedly indicated when the handler had him focus on a certain area during a 2nd pass. More than 100 people attended Tuesday's special session, and the Iowa Supreme Court uses the traveling sessions to enhance public understanding of the court system. Justices also spoke to students in area high schools as part of the program. Work kicks off on Cedar River improvements. Making waves in 2024. That's the mantra for the latest landmark project recently underway in Cedar Falls and expected to be completed by next year. The commonly referred to River Project will bring recreational enhancements to the Cedar River near downtown between the First Street Iowa Highway 57 and Main Street bridges. With the sound of construction equipment in the water and the sight of the Highway 57 bridge in the background, city officials and community stakeholders broke ground by flipping dirt on shore with shovels on Tuesday outside Gateway Park of Lincoln Street and Northern Main Street. I see this as a quality of life project for the people who live here, and not just the people who live within blocks or here of tens of miles of here. I'm talking about everybody in the state, said Ty Granham, a Cedar Falls whitewater enthusiast and river specialist with Riverwise Engineering, during his remarks. The finished project, designed by Riverside Engineering and being constructed by Peterson Contractors Incorporated, will include multiple kayak play areas, fishing jetties, habitat of spawning pools, and water access points along the riverbank, improvements and trail additions. In river improvements are first on that list of work. The Cedar Valley River Experience Committee is calling the event the official kickoff for a fundraising and pledge gathering of $500,000 to lend towards the cost. To date, $200,000 has reportedly been secured. And for more information, visit www.cedarriversexperience.com. Up to this point, we've treated our river like a garbage can. We've treated it like a sewer. If you look at the state of the river today, as we start this project, there's still pieces of broken up concrete along the river and rebar sticking out of it, Graham said. I've pulled tons out of this section of river alone. But even more importantly, we say not today. We're going to pay attention and we're going to give our river the respect that it deserves. Credit was given to Community Development Director Stephanie Hauk Sheets and Public Works Director Chase Schrage, as well as City Planner Thomas Weintraut and City Engineer Matthew Tolan, along with several other agencies and businesses involved in the process. Planning has been years in the making, but preliminary work began last week with the closing of the nearby trail. Major work officially started on Monday and is expected to be ongoing for the next 12 months. The cost had soared to $6.7 million, but has been helped out by a number of grants and some pivots in the planning. The contractor was awarded the work back in December. Plans had been delayed slightly because of needing to identify a specialized inspector of the in-water features. Cedar Falls Council addresses West 12th speeding concerns. In Cedar Falls, the city is taking immediate steps to address speeding concerns on West 12th Street, particularly in the Clay Street intersection. Traffic has increased on West 12th Road to road closures, and the intersection is on a route to two schools often walked by children and their parents. The speed limit on the road is 25 miles per hour. And there's a two-way stop on Clay Street at that intersection. The City Council called an emergency committee meeting on Monday at 8:40 p.m. following its regular meeting and a closed session. Three members of a family had voiced concern at the council meeting, and council member Dave Sires first requested that the issue be addressed with some urgency. The steps were suggested by City Administrator Ron Gaines based on council discussion during the nearby recently hour-long special session. A decision was made without a vote to implement measures in the next few days, which also include the following: relocating a crossing guard there during school hours, painting the existing crosswalk to look like piano keys or a hashtag on the road's surface, increasing speed enforcement by police officers, adding signage showing the speed limit and highlighting the pedestrian crossing. The crossing signage would be placed in the middle of the intersection. John and Rachel Mershon and her mother, Terry Vitor, who lives in the 1100 block of West 12th Street, said that they've voted concerns to the council and no other residents spoke on the issue. I'm thinking of this as Frankenstein, said Rachel Mershon. The city of Cedar Falls, meet your monster. You guys have credited this because there's no signage saying that it's 25 miles per hour. How are people supposed to know when it ends up going out to Highway 58? She asked. People think this is a highway. I've had a cat die. There are raccoons constantly we have to call for and have them picked up. That means people are going too fast. I almost died, so this is a very, very personal to me. The family claims she was very close to being hit by a truck when she was helping two school children across the street. The trio was not completely satisfied with the response to their personal, or I should say their public complaints. They had also registered complaints privately with city officials and created an online petition on change.org for a four-way stop at the intersection that got upwards to 90 signatures. Let's slow them down all around town, said John Mershon. Why stop on 12th? Let's go to 18th Street. Let's put speed humps everywhere. Let's slow the traffic down. Cedar Falls woman takes second place Monday. on the Wheel of Fortune in Cedar Falls, Nicole Winther achieved one of her big goals on Wheel of Fortune on Monday night. That was to solve at least one puzzle on the day the Cedar Falls resident will remember forever while spinning the iconic wheel and guessing one letter at a time alongside two other candidates. Despite experiencing a pair of bankrupt spins off the bat and remembering feeling a little deflated, she flipped her mindset and had a blast while solving three of the hidden phrases and taking home $6,100 as part of her second place finish on season 41, episode 6. Host Pat Sajak's final go-around on KWWL-TV. I assumed it would be a more difficult than it is in your living room solving puzzles, and it's because there's so much to do at once while also trying to solve the puzzle, she said in a telephone interview on Wednesday. I think I had most of my success when I was able to put the puzzle together when I wasn't spinning. Her big solve came during the traditional opening rounds when the category was one of her favorites, food and drink. She guessed correctly the hidden phrase, chocolates on my pillow, and proceeded to high-five her competitors. The contestants win money or prizes as determined by a spin of the wheel for each correct contestant guessed, but they have to pay to see which vowels are in a puzzle. And the contestant who has amassed the most winnings at the end of the game goes on to play the bonus round. And she did not walk always with any, she did not walk always with any special prizes like a car or vacation, nor has she gotten any of those chocolates. I still haven't gotten any of my pillows. Come on, husband, Cody, she quipped. As many as 50 gathered at the Wild Hair Americans Bar and Grill to enjoy the 45-year-old's therapist's first ever appearance on the show. And she may next try out for another game show. Down the road, she envisions taking a crack at hosting her own talk show. The feedback I'm getting from my friends and family is that I was myself. They were so happy to see I was my authentic self, and that's the best way to be. Just truly being yourself, she said. Well, that's fun. All right, what else do we have here in the paper here? Pear Fair. Planned Saturday, that's P-E-A-R. In Cedar Falls, an open-air indie craft fair returns to College Hill this weekend. The Mohair Pear Fair will be held from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday in the parking lot on the corner of 22nd and College Streets. There'll be more than 30 do-it-yourself vendors, a food truck from LaCalle, and a tent selling and spinning vinyl records. The fair is for people of all ages, and there's no admission fee. The fair started in 2010 when Dave Diebler and Barb Schiff, the owners of Mohair Pear, located at 2209 College Street, wanted to show off artists and crafters in the state, with a focus on people from the Cedar Valley area. And the alternative boutique has been in business for 28 years. Products being sold range from all types of jewelry, fiber crafts and skincare, and candles and clothing, stained glass, photography, and artwork. And Debler and Schiff started the Pear Fair to bring people physically together. And with COVID-19, they said that has become even rarer. People have said that it's valuable for people in the community to gather under tents to highlight local businesses. It's very DIY. That means do it yourself, in case you don't know. Very low level, in the best possible way, he said. They make stuff you like, you buy, and support them. He also said that the fair shines a light on College Hill when most of the focus in Cedar Falls is on Main Street. It's the most diverse neighborhood in the Cedar Valley, and it is also a great little pocket neighborhood next to the university. He says, this is our neighborhood. Well, that's great. Well, I would like to remind you, as we are now halfway through our broadcast, that you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network, for the blind and the disabled. And I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and we are reading the Courier here for Thursday, September 21st, the e-edition. Now, we are going to look at some obituary news, and then we will go back to other news in a couple minutes. LaVon Emkes has passed at the age of 90 on the 16th of September at the Bartels Lutheran Retirement Community in Waverly. And visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, September 27th at the Kaiser Korsen Funeral Home in Denver, and an hour prior to the funeral. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, the 28th of September at St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Denver, with burial to follow in the church cemetery. Memorials may be directed to St. Peter Lutheran Church, Alzheimer's Association, American Cancer Society, and Denver American Legion Post 653 Elevator Project. And also, if you want more information, you can contact the funeral home, the Kaiser Korsen Funeral Home in Denver, which is in charge, at area code 319-984-5379. Russell Leroy Hibben has passed at the age of 90 on September 18th. And funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Thursday, 21st of September, at Westminster Presbyterian Church, with Pastor Margaret Ann Overstreet officiating. A visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. Thursday at the church. Burial will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, September 22nd, in Garden of Memories Cemetery, Waterloo, Iowa, where military honors will be conducted. And okay, and let's see. And also, let me get, look at some other information. The Eaglehoff, Sigurd and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, which is located at 2659 JFK Road, is entrusted with all of those arrangements. Sharon Kreb has passed at the age of 86. And a memorial service for Sharon will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, the 25th of November, at Windhaven Assisted Living Facility, with private family burial at Fairview Cemetery, both of Cedar Falls. And in lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Western Home Communities, Fresh Wind Ministries, or you can go to their Employee Appreciation Fund, care of Jorgensen Plaza, 5307 Caraway, that's Caraway Lane in Cedar Falls in Iowa. And the zip there is 50613. Beverly Roof has passed at the age of 94, peacefully on the 14th of September in her home. And services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, the 22nd of September, at Haggerty Way Chulf Garup Funeral Service on South Street, with burial in Garden of Memories Cemetery, and public visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, and 1 hour prior to the service on Friday at the funeral home. All right. And finally, Robert Duffy, age 71, passed of Iowa City on the 12th of September at the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics. And a memorial gathering will be held from 10 a.m. to noon, with a 11:30 a.m. time for sharing on Saturday, September 23rd, at Lock and Forth in Waterloo. And memorials may be directed to the family. And arrangements by Lock and Forth and condolences may be left at www.lockefuneralservices.com. All right, let's go back now to the news here. We are now in the opinion section of the paper and of the Courier, And this we are reading here for September 21st, the E-edition. Let's take a look what we've got here. I've got a cartoon here. There's a picture of Abraham Lincoln, and then there's Mr. Douglas there. And Abraham Lincoln is looking disgruntled, and Mr. Douglas has got a kind of a sly smile on his face. And this person is saying, or telling the two, you have 30 seconds to respond, sir. And I guess that's pretty self-evident what that means. Okay, now let's take a look at something that we are all slowly having to get used to, whether we like it or not. And that is artificial intelligence. To be specific, more about driverless cars. And this is titled, Keep Both Eyes on Road for Robot Taxis. Texas is perfect for testing driverless cars, but technology will outpace regulation. And this is the Another View section of the paper. And this is from the Dallas Morning News. All right, let's take a look at this. As autonomous cars become more common, our leaders must look for down the road. Autonomous cars have already arrived on Dallas streets. As they grow in number, Texas leaders must keep both eyes on the road. News about the self-driving cars has been the talk of cities such as Austin, Texas, and San Francisco. But the driverless rideshare vehicles, or robot taxis, are also being tested in Dallas. Autonomous car company Cruise is testing their Chevy Bolts, albeit with a human in the driver's seat. By the end of the year, Cruise hopes to release the cars into Dallas without human backup, following a multi-step testing period. Cruise has already rolled out its driverless cars for public uses in Austin. The cars drive through parts of downtown, but only during the night. Legislatures have intentionally and wisely, in our view, taken a light touch thus far with regulation. A December study commissioned by the Texas legislature says that the companies are in investing in Texas because of its supportive regulatory environment, more so than any other state. This environment is working well for now. The study says that driverless cars can reduce driver error and risky driving habits, enhancing road safety. It's a good thing that Texas wants to be at the forefront of this technology, and making room for innovation has been a great boost to our economy. But as the cars become more common, frequent regulatory review will be necessary. Automated driving technologies are far from perfect. They need testing to improve. And that testing has to be done on public roads for it to yield useful real-world data. As more driverless cars are tested in Texas communities, the technology is refined and residents have a chance to interact with and learn about how these cars are going to shape the transportation future. But as long as driverless cars share public roads with human-filled cars, the companies that produce them and the states are responsible for ensuring they are properly regulated. Driverless cars may eventually become standard. That still looks to be a long way off. In the meantime, some residents will likely find that they are a nuisance. It's also possible they could be involved in serious accidents. And people probably will raise complaints with local officials. A Texas bill passed in 2017 allows automated vehicles to operate in the state, but it also stipulates that a political subdivision of the state can't regulate them. Texas has special safety and technical specifications for driverless cars, and they have to be registered, titled, insured, just like any other car. The Texas legislature has smartly ensured that autonomous car companies can develop their technology in the state, but it may need also to move faster than its biannual meeting to regulate them, given how quickly they are deploying. Without serious foresight, the state will leave cities fending for themselves. Oh, yes. Okay, let's take a look here at some other information. This is another editorial by Al Harrington. And Al Harrington is a former NBA player and the chief executive of Los Angeles-based Viola Brands. And he wrote this for the LA Times. Bank barriers hurt black people in cannabis business. As a black man who grew up in New Jersey in the 1980s and witnessed the efforts of the war on drugs in my family and community, I never thought I'd be in the cannabis business. But then again, I never thought I'd be in the NBA either. I started in the cannabis industry more than 12 years ago, near the end of my 16 seasons in the NBA, with a mission to show others the healing powers of the plant, just as I had shown it to be, also to show it to my grandma, Viola, for whom I named my company. Though marijuana is now legal in 23 states and counting, I'm constantly reminded of all the people who look like me, who spent year after year in prison for processing a few grams of weed. As legalization expands, my top priority to ensure the black and brown people have opportunities for generational wealth in our community. But the lack of banking options available because of federal prohibition means anyone who wants to start and support a business in the market needs a generous amount of cash on hand. It takes hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, just to start such a business, money that most people of color don't have. As a result, less than 2% of the legal cannabis businesses in the U.S. are owned by people who look like me. This can start to change if Congress passes the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act, sponsored by Senator Jeff Merkley, Democrat of Oregon, and expected to be up for a key committee vote soon. The bill would protect banks and other financial institutions from federal agencies for working with legal cannabis businesses. No one can build and sustain businesses without access to banks, a business account, credit cards, access to traditional loans and lines of credit are necessary for day-to-day operations and long-term survival in any industry. Barriers to those services, along with excessive taxes and local prohibition, have helped ensure that California's illicit market continues to account for the majority of cannabis sales. Even the big guys in the legitimate industry are feeling it. Some of California's largest operators have closed down, and large multi-state firms are pulling out of the market left and right. The few financial institutions that are willing to extend credit to minority-owned cannabis companies charge insane and unfair interest rates. No wonder the NAACP called for immediate passage of the Safe Banking Bill. Our communities have already been targeted of predatory lenders. The cannabis industry is no exception. Without access to banking, we have to personally guarantee the success of our businesses and face being held liable with no bankruptcy protection if they fail, which businesses often do. I have firsthand experience paying a creditor high interest while I'm paying another company unreasonable fees just to hold my money, making the opportunity for success even slimmer. Passing this legislation will help black cannabis professionals prosper in a business that has historically been used against us, provide much-needed relief for the industry nationwide, and allow our businesses to function as others do. And though it won't fully legalize cannabis, which should be the primary goal, it would be a great start. And again, That is written by Al Harrington, a former NBA player and chief executor of Los Angeles-based Viola Brands. Very interesting article. All right, let's continue on here. We now are in the Northeast Iowa Area Escapade section of the paper. Let's take a look at some of the events that are coming up here. Friday, the 22nd of September, this is country music. Country stars will be on stage at the Hippodrome during the National Cattle Congress Fair on the NCC grounds in Waterloo. And that starts at 7 p.m. on Friday, and tickets are $35, not including $10 gate admission. Also, on the 23rd, which is Saturday, Help Kids with Tumors. The Shine the Light NF Walk is Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon at Island Park Shelter Shelter 1 at 500 Center Street, Cedar Falls. The fundraising event will benefit the Children's Tumor Foundation to help end neurofibromatosis, or NF, a group of genetic conditions that cause tumors. Food and entertainment, and silent auction, and a short program are planned with the walk. Saturday also, on the 23rd of September, Party Hardy Downtown. The inaugural Cedar Falls Downtown District Street Party takes place from 4 to 10 p.m. Saturday. Main Street will be closed for the party, and activities will include giant yard games, silent disco, pickleball, and live music. Beer, wine, and non-alcoholic drinks are allowed in the official street party as well. Also on the 23rd, Shop the Pear Fair, a curated showcase of local and regional handmade crafts and designs, will be featured at the Pear Fair from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday. The annual event takes place on the corner of 22nd and College Street in Cedar Falls. On Friday, the 22nd, Kevin James brings some laughs. Stand-up comedian actor Kevin James brings his Irregardless tour to the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center in Cedar Falls for a show at 7:30 p.m. on Friday. James' TV sitcom, The King of Queens, ran from 1998 to 2007. He's performed TV specials for Comedy Central and Netflix and starred in Paul Blart, Mall Cop 1 and 2. Tickets are available at Unitix, that's UNTIX dot UNI dot EDU. The box office located at the Strayer Wooden Theater on the University of Northern Iowa campus. And you also can call them 319, area code 273-4849. And let's see, we got a couple other things here. We've got on Sunday, the 24th of September, annual cemetery walk set. The Cedar Falls Historical Society will host its annual cemetery walk at 2 p.m. Sunday at Fairview Cemetery at 1350 West 12th Street in Cedar Falls. Friends of the Cedar Falls Historic Society will share stories of Cedar Falls citizens who employed the women whose stories are told in the 2020 exhibition. Everybody ought to have a maid servants in Cedar Falls, and a $5 donation is recommended. Thursday, the 28th of September, Oops, All Loops to Perform, the Cedar Falls Music Series will feature the acoustic music by Oops, All Loops, Thursday at 7 p.m. The event takes place at Singles Speed Brewing at 128 North Main Street in Cedar Falls, and there will be limited release craft beer on tap. And then finally, on Saturday, the 23rd and the 24th, Saturday and Sunday, more music at NCC. Everclear with the Ataris and Pink Spiders will entertain at 7 p.m. on Saturday during the National Cattle Congress Fair in the Hippodrome, and tickets are available at, and here it is, so you might want to write this down, https://www.everclearmusic.com/tour. Benjamin Williams Hastings, a North Irish singer, songwriter, and worship leader, will close out the NCC Fair on Sunday. The doors open at 2 p.m. and the performance begins at 3 p.m. Tickets are $12, not including gate admission. All right, so lots of good things coming up here this weekend. All right, let's see what else is going on here in the paper. We still have a few minutes to go here. Let's take a look at the weather forecast. Today, it's going to be cloudy with some breaks of sun, high of 82. Tonight will be 60 degrees for a low. Friday, it will be variable clouds and maybe a thunderstorm. And it'll be anywhere between, it'll be a high of 79 and a low of 60 degrees. Saturday, breezy with a thunderstorm, high of 82, a low of 59. Sunday, some rain and also probably a thunderstorm. Hey, folks, we need the rain, right? High of 73, low of 59. And the outlook for Monday, a strong morning thunderstorm, high of 71, low of 56. So if you're like me, you better get out and get your lawn cut before the moisture comes in, because we're hoping to get a lot. Because, boy, we sure need it in the state of Iowa. All right, let's take a look also at the national forecast. A stalled front in Florida will allow for Florida, much of coastal Georgia and South Carolina to have showers and thunderstorms today. High pressure will keep it dry in the northeast, while a storm allows for severe thunderstorms to erupt in the plains. Showers and even high elevation snow will spread across the interior northwest. Good heavens, whoever thought we'd be reading that this soon? Well, fall is almost here. Oh boy. Okay, let's take a look at another piece of news here before we go for the day. Reynolds pushes back on Trump comments. Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds pushed back on comments President Donald Trump made over the weekend, suggesting that the state laws banning abortions after 6 weeks, like the one Reynolds signed into law in July, are a terrible mistake. Trump, the front runner in the Republican presidential primary, made the comments in a Sunday interview on Meet the Press with Kristen Welker, pointing to the policy his presidential primary opponents, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, signed into law in April. It's never a terrible thing to protect innocent life, Reynolds said on Tuesday on X, formerly Twitter. I'm proud of the fetal heartbeat bill the Iowa legislation passed and I signed in 2018 and again earlier this year. The Florida law makes abortion illegal after 6 weeks. With some exceptions, Iowa's law currently blocked because of a lawsuit bans abortion after cardiac activity can be detected in an embryo or in a fetus, with some exceptions, which can be as early as 6 weeks. I think what we did is a terrible thing and a terrible mistake, Trump said in the interview. Reynolds signed a near identical version of the law in 2018, which was permanently blocked by a district court. The new law is now before the Iowa Supreme Court to determine its constitutionality. Trump, whose Supreme Court appointments were instrumental in delivering the decision that overturned Roe versus Wade and the federal abortion protection, did not say whether he would support a national abortion ban or what the cutoff should be. He said he would bring together Republicans and Democrats to find a number of weeks or months that's going to make people happy. Trump is set to return to Iowa on Wednesday, making campaign stops in Dubuque and Maquoketa. I'm sure I mispronounced that again incorrectly. And Reynolds is not scheduled to appear at either of the events, and she has not appeared alongside Trump since March. Well, that just about does it now for the reading of the Courier. This is the e-edition I've been reading today, and for September 21st, and this is Thursday. Good heavens, we're also approaching the weekend, and this is Peter Welch. I am your narrator, and you have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk again next week. Take care, everybody. So long.
Are you among the millions of Americans living with chronic pain? If so, you may think prescription opioids are the solution. The truth is, the benefits of opioids are limited. Opioids only mask the pain. Opioids also come with serious side effects, ranging from nausea to withdrawal symptoms to overdose. As many as 25% of people who are prescribed opioids struggle with addiction. And those who are addicted to opioids are 40 times more likely to move on to heroin. No one wants to live in pain, but no one should put their health at risk to be pain-free. There is another choice, physical therapy. Physical therapists treat pain through movement and exercise, no warning labels required, and you get to be an active participant in your care. Choose to treat your pain safely. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist near you. This public service announcement is brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.